And I invite you to join me in prayer. Oh God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So I knew revolutionary generosity lived here before I could read. At the time, I called it courage. For what is revolutionary generosity but the courageous giving of oneself to another in hope and faith that things can change? I grew up in a family who thought that the very best thing to do on a birthday or a holiday, or really any day, was to take a trip to the old North Bridge in Concord and reflect on the courage of the ordinary people of 18th century Massachusetts, who put their bodies and their hearts between federal troops and their neighbors. And that habit and that family meant that I knew courage lived in this congregation before I could read. Before I could read, before I knew about the triangle trade of molasses, rum, and enslaved people that enriched the families that owned the Long Wharf, I knew the story of the 18th of April in 75, when Paul Revere went to prepare for his fateful ride, and deacon of this church, William Dawes, said to him, "I'll go with you. We'll do it together." Before I could read, before I knew that local stories about Tisquantum and the first Thanksgiving covered over a multitude of sins, I knew that while the old North Church had the lanterns, the old South Meeting House had the thinking. It had the thinking that turned into conversations, the conversations that turned into planning, the planning that turned into neighbor turning to neighbor on the eve of the Boston Tea Party and saying, "I'll go with you, Sam. We'll do it together. I'll go with you. We'll do it together." That's the piece that's missing from the start of the parable of the Good Samaritan. The man traveling along the road to Jericho walked alone. All of the harm that follows from a lack of a companion along the way. The road from Jerusalem to Jericho was dangerous. It stretched through barren terrain with many spots where bandits could hide. The route was treacherous enough that even those who did not travel it well knew its reputation. Jesus' audience would have known to pull their wraps a little closer, to lean in for a story of danger and courage and faith. The people hearing Jesus talk would have expected a robbery, an injured man left alone on the side of the road. They might even have expected the priest and the Levite, the member of the priestly class, to pass by the injured man. The story Jesus tells fits a form where the first two characters choose propriety over the heart of the law, and the third character flips expectations through deep knowledge of Torah and compassionate wisdom. What they would not have expected is for that third character to be anyone but a Jewish layman. They would not have expected a Samaritan to be the one moved with compassion to care for the man. Samaritans were a kind of second-class citizen to Jesus' audience. They were, according to Dr. Klein Snodgrass, considered people of doubtful descent and inadequate theology. Samaritans were not supposed to be the kind of people who threw their lot in with an injured stranger, who let go of their plans for themselves and their lives, so moved with compassion to help an injured man. This unexpected hero does not stop there. By caring for the injured man, the Samaritan makes himself more vulnerable. Before he stopped, he was the one riding his donkey. He likely had his own plans for his oil and wine, his own timeline for traveling a dangerous road alone. Instead, he slows his pace, shares his resources, and increases his risk, telling the injured man, "I'll go with you. We'll do it together." He continues to share his resources at the inn, offering the innkeeper, another character of doubtful descent and inadequate theology, 2 weeks' wages to care for the injured man. With his promise to return, the Samaritan commits to continued relationship with both the injured man and the innkeeper. So much so that by the time Jesus asks the expert in the law, who in the story acts as a neighbor, the expert is left to choose between two men alone and the beginnings of a little community. One where resources are held in common between the innkeeper, the Samaritan, and the man. And each one's good is bound up in the good of the others. It's a question barely worthy of an expert in the law. You can't be a neighbor alone. The expert in the law answers rightly in any case. The neighbor is the one who showed mercy, the Samaritan who acted with courage, who gave of himself for another in the hopes that things could change. Courage. Courage must undergird any enduring revolutionary generosity, any kind of sharing of self that believes in change not yet seen. Courage comes from the Latin word for heart, for innermost feelings. In the same way that the word we translate as compassion, the word we use to describe the feelings of the Good Samaritan when he stops to help, comes from the Greek word for heart. It's a feeling that comes in the very depth of your being and requires you to take action for the sake of another, requires you to be a neighbor. Requires you to say, "I'll go with you. We'll do it together." The man traveling along the road from Jerusalem to Jericho walked alone. He started his journey without a companion, without community along the way. Because his is a fictional story from the first century, we can be fairly certain that he did not know about the courage of this congregation before he could read. He couldn't have known. He could not have known that for 357 years, when violence has threatened, when tyranny has killed to protect itself, the people of Old South Church have taken action. Whatever form the powers and principalities have taken, whatever lies about the inherent worth of God's beloveds have seeped into the age, time and again, this congregation has risked its well-being for its neighbors. You have thrown your lot in with those around you. You have changed your plans, shared your oil and your wine, and you have come back 2 weeks later to check in. You've brought soup with you when you do. When Jesus asks the expert in the law who his neighbor is, you already know that there is no end to that question. No faith claim that needs to be just right, no legacy of birth or class, no line of demarcation between ethnicities, abilities, or sizes, between skin tones or genders or nationalities. You already know in your hearts that there is no amount of cautious planning that makes one worthy of neighborliness and another not, no passport stamp or lack thereof that makes one speck of difference in who we're invited to love such that their good is bound up with ours. You already know that by the grace of God, there is no rightness of us or wrongness of another that allows for the possibility of this congregation becoming the church of the closed door. I knew courage lived here before I could read. In our deacons, in our worship, in our members, in our stories. In the ways our sanctuary doors stay open to the neighborhood. It lives in Frankie's welcome this morning as much as it ever lived in Sam Adams' Songs of Revolution. In this season, Our God is inviting us to step more deeply into that courage, more deeply into revolutionary generosity, more deeply in to loving and living like the Good Samaritan, who looked around and saw no end to the question of who is my neighbor. Jesus invites us into this kind of courage, invites all of us to go and do likewise, to slow our pace, to share our resources, to increase our risk, to give ourselves to one another in faith and hope that things can change. May we have the courage to say yes, to say, I'll go with you. We'll do it together. Amen.